Yeah, I mean, dude, Strange Brew and Kevin Smith are like my really only two connects to like the Canadian world. Good day, eh?
Oh, hey, good day, and welcome to another episode of Forge Side Chat, a podcast about blacksmithing, bladesmithing, and everything in between, with a heavy focus on talent in the Great White North. Talking about Canada, eh? Guess what? Heading down south once again to Arizona, where the snowbirds go, eh? That's where my grandparents would normally be heading this time of year, but my grandparents are old and they ain't going nowhere right now, I'll tell you that much. But where I'm going is down to Mesa, Arizona, because that's where Matt Smith resides. And Matt Smith runs Smitty Tut Design. You may have heard of Smitty Tut on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube. Guy's got Etsy account, TikTok. He's all over the place, all over the socials. Go check this guy out, Smitty Tut. This guy makes awesome knives, and he's only been doing that for about a year. But prior to that and all of it mixed in together, he's a prop designer for about 13 years now. We're going to dive deep into hearing about how he does all this stuff. Before we do that, Matt, I know that you recently just did the Samurai Challenge and you posted an amazing video on YouTube. Congratulations on your amazing design.
Appreciate it.
You bought your steel from our friend Lawrence Lake at Maritime Knife Supply. And let me tell you what, I bet you got the fastest shipping you've ever had in your entire life when it comes to ordering steel. Am I right?
Oh, dude, I've talked about it in my YouTube videos for sure. The Chopper Challenge and the Samurai Challenge are the two that I got steel from. And it's amazing that it came all the way from Canada to Arizona in the time that it did. And let alone, like I was saying in my video on YouTube, the prices that they got. Even my Norton Blaze belts that I got from there, way cheaper than I can get here. And more
nice.
Available.
Yeah. Okay. I think that's enough. Oh, actually, one more thing. If you need to get yourself an Even Heat or a Paragon Kiln, use the code FSC Kiln at checkout. You'll save yourself $100.
Oh.
There you go, bro. So, Matt, welcome to the show. Thank you very much for sitting down with me. I know it was a last minute invitation and you jumped all over it. Like, it was like, let's do this, buddy. I'm into this. I want a podcast. Let's talk about life. How's it going, man? What's going on?
It's going good. It's going good, man. I appreciate you having me on. You're popping the proverbial cherry for me. First time doing a podcast ever.
Ah, nice, man. Well, like I said, welcome to the show, man. We've said it before. We just kind of try to shoot the shit and have fun here, man. So lay back, relax, pop a cold brew if you want to. And have yourself a couple jokes, man. We love to joke. You got yourself a good dad joke, by the way?
Oh, probably too many for you.
You're going to have to pull one out by the end of the episode, man. At least one or two, okay? Because I love the dad joke. Everybody does. All right, man. So, Samurai Challenge, dude. You got invited to that? Or was that something that you had to, you know, kind of put yourself in the mix for? How does that work?
Yeah, no. So Dennis Tyrell, Tyrell Knife Works, he has the whole challenge set up with like the judges and then their competitors underneath that, but they open it up to viewers so that anyone can participate, basically. And he's got a whole YouTube channel, a whole Facebook channel where everyone that wants to participate as a viewer can go in, ask questions, post progress pictures and all that. So that's kind of what I did.
Cool. So that puts you like in the mix. Anybody who wants to do that is put into the mix, and then they go through all of that and they judge how everybody did in the long run through Dennis. And there was a couple other judges. Who else was on the judging list this year?
They had Walter Sorrells. I think is how you say it.
Sorrells. Walter Sorrells, yeah. I think. Okay.
Yeah.
He was a judge too. Dude, that's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, it was nuts. I've been learning from him for years. So to see him pop up as a judge, I was like, oh, snap, that's pretty cool.
That's super rad. Yeah, dude. Wow. And do you mind me asking? Like, I don't know what place you got in the challenge. Where did you end up on the placement list?
I got third place, surprisingly.
You did. No, I am not surprised, dude. I know that Justin Lamoureux ended up winning the challenge, right?
I think he may have gotten
second. Or was it second? Was it second?
That I think he got second.
Who got first?
It was the brother of JP, and JP was the one that got first place in the other bracket.
Right, that's right.
The big boys bracket, yeah.
That's right. Okay, and those awesome. Were
amazingly cool.
Yeah, dude, Justin and I know each other. He lives not too far from me. I've interacted with the guy before. I've actually used to be the host, one of the hosts of the show. It's how it started, was myself and Justin.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, man. So there's a little bit of history there. He's actually shown me how to make my first knife, and it turned out absolutely amazing. So I have a lot of respect for Justin in that matter, and his ability to make knives and his skills. And when I watched your video, I was like, holy frick, man. If Justin got second, I apologize, I'm mistaken. I thought maybe he was first for some reason, but I was like, I thought for sure, if he was in that ranking, you've got to be like right behind him. And I didn't know really how to look into that and find out who placed where on the entire ranking list. But dude, third place, that's awesome.
Yeah. So Juan Perez, I think, is the one that I'm looking at here. He had like snakeskin on there. Pretty sure he's the one that got first, because Dennis was saying he was the brother of the other first place JP Bladeworth. But yeah, no, those are both amazing builds.
Yeah, yeah. So where did you get the inspiration for yours? Did you have something in the back of your mind that was going into for a long time, or?
No, not at all. even when I like made a post, when I finished in the Facebook group, I was like, you know, I really like these challenges because they kind of really push me to do things I wouldn't do before. I'd never thought to ever try and do a katana or, you know, a waki or a tanto. So it was just kind of like going into it, like, what do I think would be cool? What would be something that I would want, basically? Here in the States, there's mall stores that have katanas up the wall, you know, for yards and yards and yards. And it's like, I just want to do something that I haven't seen before that I thought that, you know, if I had it on my wall, I would dig it.
I hear that, man. I mean, like I said, I've buddies with Justin, and I visited his place a few times, and he's got his, you know, different swords on display and stuff like that. And I see that stuff, and it's like, man, maybe one of these days I should make myself a sword or like a really like rad knife or something like that. It's not something that's really been like hot on my list of things to do, but I see the guys like, dude, your guys' builds, man. I'm just like, frick, this stuff's it's beyond me though, man. The amount of skill that it takes, all the different stuff that you have to do when it comes to building one of those. Like, it's not just like, it's not just blade work. There's so much more intricate little things you can do to it, man. Like,
even if you join the Facebook group just to see everyone else's builds, there's a person in there that did a katana, and he had like an elk antler for the handle.
Nice.
And it was wicked cool. And it's like, to think that someone sat there and, you know, drilled it out, you know, got everything epoxied in. It's insane. It's insane the steps people take, you know, to complete their builds.
Dude, I want to see this elk antler one. I'm going to have to go check that out after this chat, man, because that sounds rad.
Dude, it's pretty gnarly. Like, throughout seeing it in the group as he was posting, I'm going, dang, I don't have a chance. Not against that.
But yeah, you popped in third, dude.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I was surprised. Yeah. Like, this is the third time that I've, you know, competed in these challenges, and I'm surprised to even place at all, you know.
You did the Chopper Challenge last time, right?
Yeah, Chopper Challenge last time, and then the Fantasy Challenge was my first one that I tried out.
Nice. And did you place in either of those?
Yeah, I got first place in both of those.
First place in both of those?
Yeah.
What the heck, dude? Okay, wow.
It's gnarly, my apologies. Crazy.
That's amazing, dude. And you said like a year of knife making under your belt.
I mean, kind of like the Fantasy Challenge. I hopped into it because I've got this big wall of like cleavers and swords that I want to, you know, make. and it's all out of just regular hot rolled steel. You know, I've worked in the laser and water jet programming business, so I'll program lasers and water jets for like the day job. So I've been cutting these things out for years and practicing how to grind, you know, how to work with steel, but I've never done tool steel. So when I did the fantasy challenge, that was just hot rolled steel, like just plain, nothing tool, nothing like that. So when I got first place, Maritime was a big sponsor, and I was like, I'll take the time, I'll get some real tool steel. I got 1095, and then for the chopper challenge, was my first time ever heat treating 1095. I mean, grinding it, heat treating it, you know, the whole nine yards.
And what method of heat treating did you use, like out of the forge into oil or?
Yeah, I got Parks 90 to quench it in, and a three burner forge that was basically off Amazon that I insulated in this, it came with the ceramic blankets, and then I added in the refractory cement, and then this stuff called HT100, which is supposed to, I guess, really boost the heat. Because for 1095, everything that I was reading up on was like, you need to hit like a 1600 degree heat mark. So it was like, I'll just push everything I got at it.
Nice. Rad, dude. Yeah. Wow. Freaking, that's pretty crazy that you've been at this that short amount of time, but I totally get the backstory to that with working in the metal industry prior to this, how much that can assist you in that, because I come from a welding background, and jumping into blacksmithing, it was like second nature to me, man, right?
Absolutely.
So, dude, want to know, tell me about your tool. I mean, tools. What do you got rocking in your shop, bro?
As far as tools go, nothing really that much. Well, I mean, the biggest one that I got, it was a huge investment, was the TW90 grinder, horizontal vertical.
Nice.
And that, the Travis Wirtz, the guy that makes that, he lives here in Arizona, just a few miles away. So ordered that, and he came over and delivered it, and got to grind it. Before that, dude, it was a one by, I think it's like a 1x30 from Harbor Freight.
Right. Yeah.
I've gone through two of those at that point, and that's when I was like, there's no way I can grind anything worth, you know.
not the katana, that's for sure. Jeez Louise.
Oh my gosh, dude. All three of those, it took a span of 2 days to grind all those, because I think I had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. I had 8 different grinds per blade, and that was times the katana, the waki, and the tondo.
Jeez. Do you have your grinding area set up kind of somewhere remote, or is it just wide open in the shop, kind of part of the shop? Or
unfortunately, it's just wide open in the shop, but it's fortunately by the bay door, so it's like, open that up and let everything go out.
Yeah, well, and in Arizona, you just have the door open all the time, probably. Or do you have air conditioning in your shop?
No. Okay. I mean, we've got these like little window AC units that don't do anything compared to like the 120 degree heat coming in.
Oh,
so they're there to kind of like assist a little bit, but.
So then you run a forge in the shop on top of that, dude?
Outside in the driveway.
Okay. Yeah, because hell, if you ran that indoors, hey.
Oh yeah, no, and that, dude, I will say, that's, having that forge on is intimidating. I mean, hearing that thing breathe fire the way it does, I don't think I'd want it anywhere near, you know, any indoor walls.
fair enough. I mean, you do have to be careful with that. It's, I've seen some shops before where I'm like, geez Louise, buddy, your forge is like right beside the wall. Like, I don't know about that, but they teach their own. I mean, you can set up fire barrier and stuff like that to, you know, be a little bit on the safer side, right?
Yeah.
So what about an anvil? Are you rocking an anvil at all?
No, I have not gotten to like actual like pounding steel or anything like that.
Not yet. No. Eh?
No. Like, it's like, it's small baby steps. Yeah, I mean, it'd be sweet to have like a power hammer and do all, like, dude, seeing all these guys make this beautiful Damascus out of these, you know, multitude of different materials, I'm like, you know, life goals right there.
Yeah, well, you know that Maritime carries Damascus from, what is it, Baker Forge tool, right? Yeah, they got some
really nice looking stuff.
Yeah, so if you ever get to that point where you want to try working with Damascus before you're ready to make your own, you can always just head on over to Maritime Knife Supply and use some of their stuff. So how many knives have you made outside of the Chopper Challenge and stuff like that? Have you been making knives outside of that kind of stuff, or actual usable knives with tool steel or just prop stuff?
Steel, no, mainly just prop stuff. One of the big things that I was doing was going to like the local Goodwills and buying out their butter knives.
Okay.
I basically made so far quite a few hundred, like what I call them tactical butter knives, where I'll grind to look like little, you know, mini tontos, and then make a sheath, you know, out of kydex or out of leather, and then, you know. But yeah, that's about it. Other than that, it's just practicing
butter knives. Nice. I've heard that term before somewhere. I can't remember where, but I think there was a thing on Knife Talk where they're talking about tactical butter knives.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I think there was actually like a design that went into it and everything that they actually started making tactical butter knives.
Nice. That's cool.
So the prop world, dude, why 13 years of doing that? Where did that start and how did you get into doing props, man? And why?
All right. So I've got like a big history of being a comic book nerd. And I know I told you before, like I'm a big Kevin Smith fan. Kind of like a little kid at heart like him.
Nice.
So I grew up watching cartoons, you know, getting comic books, playing video games. Went into school to do art, graphic design, stuff like that, comic books, comic book covers. And then later on, trying to transition into the real world, I started working at a sign company. And at the sign company, in comes these guys that have just opened up a water jet shop. They're like, hey, if you guys need signs cut, you know, we can cut them out of metal. I was like, that's cool. So I went and popped in there. And because I'm such a nerd, I had drawn up some Wolverine claws and was like, hey, can you guys take this file and cut them out of metal for me? And they were like, sure, but how do you know how to make this file type? I'm like, that's what I went to school for. Like, I don't know, like in the computer. I don't know what to tell you. And they were like, well, we need someone that knows how to do what you do. And then from there, it was, you know, programming, you know, water jets, lasers to cut stuff out of metal. And my little kid at heart trying to be like, what props can I make? What swords can I make? I had one person ask me, hey, can you do a Captain America shield at one point? And then that's where everything really like took off. And for years, I did nothing but Captain America shields.
No way.
Yeah.
So, and people like pay good money for these, I'm assuming.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, I did these really, like you could wear, on your back and on your left or right forearm. It's all leather that I hand tooled, automotive grade paint and clear coats. Like
nice, dude.
Yeah. I would take them to comic book conventions and people would just kind of walk, like, they'd walk by. And then their head would slightly turn and they start drifting like a moth to a light.
Well, that answers that question. I was going to say, how do you go about marketing, selling items like that? Comic-Con.
Oh, just, yeah, Comic-Con. I mean, that's definitely the way to go.
Set up a booth or do you just go and, yeah? Okay, cool. So when you set up a booth for something like that, do you have to have a bunch of pre-made items or do you just have like a couple of things and you kind of like just to show off a little bit of what you do and you just take custom orders or how does that work for you?
Basically, I would have like I think I had 12 or 13 different shields because I would do them like there was a Batman version of like the Captain America shield. Like I would do different color schemes and different logos in the middle of them. And I just had like Wonder Woman, Batman, Superman, Spawn, and them out. Like I think I bought at the biggest point 4 tables worth in a row so that I could spread everything.
Wow. Holy smokes, dude. That's rad. And what do one of those shields go for normally?
They were going for 1,000.
Wow. That's amazing, dude. Good job. That's really good. Man. You. And now you're moving into making, you know, different prop blades. Are you selling those as well through the same idea?
Well, I mean,
or?
for that same time frame, I was like, you know, behind the shields was, I had this big perforated metal backdrop where I hung all the swords that I was making. So I did like, you know, He-Man sword, Thundercat sword, Legend of Zelda, Adventure Time sword. But these are all like, you know, out of aluminum that I, you know, hand polished and wrapped in leather and stuff like that.
Yeah, but
nothing that you could like get hurt with.
Only, well, yeah, you could. I mean, aluminum can still hurt somebody. But I mean, everything that went into those, the only element was that little bit of black magic of heat treating it.
Right?
Like, really? I mean, outside of using tool steel and doing the heat treating side of things, you're making blades and prop items that would blow people's minds, dude. Like, you look at the work you do, and it's like, this guy's like making Hollywood type shit, man. And it's like, what the fuck? And you've been, and when you say you've been making like actual blades for only a year, and it's like, well, yeah, you did the, you know, a couple, that's it. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah. where's this gonna go for you, dude? Like, what's the plan? Where are you gonna take this?
I don't know, man. I'm just having fun at this point. The prop world kind of died off because, you know, COVID happened and all these conventions were like, we don't want people gathering together anymore. So it was like, let's make some real shit. So now I'm just kind of having fun with, you know, playing with tool steel and learning as much as I can, you know, heat treating and all that stuff.
And you're still at the laser jet place? Water jet place?
I've transitioned from there to another fabrication company, really good company. I've been with them for a couple of years now, but they've got a industrial, you know, metal cutting laser.
Cool. So are you doing the same thing though?
Yeah.
Yeah. Rad. So if you did ever decide that you wanted to do like a batch run of knives, you have the ability to like throw a sheet on the laser at work and get it cut out?
Oh yeah. Absolutely.
Dude.
From working there and the previous place, I have worked with and cut batches for tons of Arizona-based knife makers that a lot of people think, yeah, that they forge them themselves and all that. And it's like, well, they get tool steel and they get it cut out, but you know, their main is the grind. You know, heat treat it and grind.
Yeah. Well, there's a side to me that. It's arguably on certain people's side of things that it's not the way it is, but for any sort of forging you do to a knife is degrading the steel just slightly compared to what it was prior. And if you just do stock removal, I mean, the steel's essentially already forged to begin with. The stock steel was forged to stock steel, right? So, I mean, what are you doing by forging it to shape other than, you know,
rearranging the metals?
Yeah, putting that mark on it, right? That forged look to it. If that's what somebody wants, they want that forged brute to forge look. There you go. Then you kind of have no choice. But outside of that, if you're forging to shape just because you're like, oh, I want to save on material. Oh my God, seriously, I don't know, man. I think. Laser jet out or water jet out a whole bunch of blanks and just grind your
maximize the sheet that you got. I mean, make as much fun stuff as you can. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So, what tools are hot on your list to get for the shop then right now? If you sound like you're working pretty limited, dude. Outside of the 2x7, do you have a heat? You don't have a heat treating because you just have the forge and oil.
Well. I do. So my wife is a painter and she's kind of the one that was like on the helping me paint side of the Captain America shields and stuff.
Okay.
She did like motorcycles and cars back in the day with her uncle.
Rad.
But I've gotten basically a whole area in the backyard where we've got this quote unquote shop where I've got a sandblasting cabinet and a double stack smoker that I made from it's basically a heat treating oven.
Cool.
Or Cerakote. So it's a whole spray room for her to Cerakote all the stuff that, you know, we do.
Oh yeah, interesting.
So after heat treating, I'll put it in the Cerakote oven, which is big enough to do about 72 inches worth of metal.
Right. So like that's good for doing your tempering and then
temper cycle, yeah.
Rad, very rad. That's a sweet oven to have for sure. And outside versus having to do your tempering in your indoor. I don't know how many times I've seen posts from guys saying, yeah, so the wife told me I can't temper in the house anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. The biggest thing that I get is when I do kydex in the house, I get some side eyes looking over. Yeah.
Get that plastic smelling smell.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Something that I'm not familiar with. I don't play with the kydex. Well, I don't play with much of anything when it comes to knives, dude. I don't do leather work. So if you've done all these shields before with leather work, then you've got leather working tools, obviously, right?
Yeah, yeah. About a year ago, just before the fantasy challenge started, I had gotten a Glowforge, and basically been doing all custom sheaths with that.
Nice.
Yeah. Cool. Other than that, it was tooling the Captain America shield by hand.
Oh, yeah, hey.
Yeah. This is nice, thick, eighth-inch, like, thick leather, too. So it really smokes. Takes a cool on you.
Yeah. How do you cut that by hand? Just using shears of some sort? Or do you have to have, like, a special knife for cutting it, or what?
I just use shears and razor blades.
Yeah, hey.
Yeah, because I'm just going straight edges. It's not, like, doing any curves or anything like that. It's not until I was getting into the sheath making where it's, like, I tried doing one by hand and was like, no, I need something a little bit more, you know, down my alley of programming something that I could draw up in CAD and then have that cut out exactly the way I need it.
Nice.
Because the weird thing about leather is when I tried making that first sheath and I was punching the holes, it was almost like the leather kind of stretched out every time you punched the holes. So when you tried to line two of them up, they were just slightly off, just enough. Hmm. But on the Glowforge, you know, it cuts it out. Holes are perfectly lined up.
That's rad.
You just sit there and hand stitch and hand stitch and hand stitch.
Yeah. And when you hand stitch leather, do you have to use a special? I know nothing about leather, dude. I apologize. People are probably like,
you're good.
Lando's like freaking noob here. Is it special thread, or do you use leather thread, or how does that work?
I'm kind of a noob at it too. I'm just kind of, I went online and searched what people that made leather wallets and sheaths and stuff like that use. You know what I mean? And nice. Ritsa Tiger thread is like the one that kept popping up. Ritsa Tiger thread. All right, I'll try that shit out. And it works really good. Cool. So, but I mean, I haven't tried anything else other than that. So,
excuse me.
No worries.
So, if you're going to get into this knife making game, dude, do you see yourself actually going forward into that? Like, I'm making a presumption here that that's what you're gonna do, is that you're gonna go forward into the knife making game. But it sounds like you are. You've got the equipment for it. You're getting yourself geared up here, right?
Oh yeah. I mean, I would like to, you know, that would be the end goal, is doing what I love, doing what's fun. And right now making swords is what's really fun.
that's what I was going to ask you, is what's the focus? Is it swords? Is it a specific style of knife? What's hot on your list, dude?
Well, that big wall of cleavers that I have, I'm a sucker for cleavers, especially big sword size cleavers, hog splitters, or whatever you want to call them.
Okay.
That stuff always interests me.
So that's what you want to try, whipping up some big freaking hog splitters, eh?
Yeah.
Dude, that's going to jumping into that right off the hop. Okay, I know Matt Gentry just posted today or yesterday that.
Oh god. It wasn't even like an hour or two ago that I saw the follow up where he took one of them and he was like, "All right, we're going to see how far this crack goes," and he pushed it and it just cracked right out. I was like, "Oh, my heart broke."
Yeah, those things are beautiful. I meant to message him and ask him what he thought was the whole reasoning behind what happened there, and if he had any, you know, background story to that, because I did send a message or whatever, or sent not a message, but I commented on his post saying, you know, like, are you sure that there's not more cracks that you can't see hidden within the steel, right? Like, is it not, how do you know it's not riddled with stress cracks throughout the entire steel? And I mean, I guess when you go to do that bend break test, that's going to show you if there's more stresses going through the steel beyond that anyway. So, but then again, the whole reason I asked that question is I'm learning and I'm trying to figure all this kind of stuff out. Right. And guys like Gentry or, you know, guys that you look up to in the craft, who are some of the guys you look up to?
Oh, dude, he's definitely one of them, but dude, there's like a list of people that I follow. RS Knifeworks, that was a really big one for me, the way he does his grinds.
I don't know if I know that who that would be. RS Knifeworks. Gonna have to look that one up and add that to make sure I have that added to the playlist.
Here we go. Looks like Robert San. Oh, I'm not even gonna try and butcher his last name. But he does some wicked hollow grinds. I mean, not just hollow grinds, but the way he does compound grinds with hollow grinds, it's insane. He does all freehand too, and that's something that like I really rely on jigs, and I know it's kind of frowned upon, but I rely on jigs a lot.
Is it frowned upon?
From what I've heard, I mean, so like me coming from a prop maker into the knife making world, there's a lot of people that will take you under your wings and, you know, be your friends. A local guy, Matt Reed with Magnum Works, I vouch for him all the time. He's very successful in the knife making business, and he's very knowledgeable, and he's come over and ran electrical for me, hooked up the TW90 and all that.
Nice.
But from what I've seen, there's the people that will take you under the wing and encourage you, and then there's a group of people that are like, you didn't forge that, you're not a real knife maker, you use a jig, you don't do it by hand, you're not a real knife maker. Or, you know, even the people that use, you know, CNCs to prototype a lot of their stuff. It's like, well, that's not really making a knife. I'm like, well, it's kind of a pointy stabby thing, and I don't think I'd want to get stabbed by it. So I would say it's probably a knife.
Yeah, yeah. There's definitely maybe the debate of, like, at what point can you call it not handmade anymore? Or,
yeah,
you know, really, like, I mean...
And there's this
That's a hard debate.
There's this big thing with people that like to say it's not battle ready. And I'm not sure what that means. I see it a lot, especially on my stuff, because people like to kind of drag stuff in like, that's not battle ready. And I'm like, well, what does battle ready mean? Like, you taking that to battle to go through armor? Because, I mean, I wouldn't want to get stabbed with it or an arm taken off.
That's not something I'm familiar with. I wonder where that comes from. If it's all about the fact that, you know, these are hardcore reenacting kind of people that are like, you know, like that would just get damaged and broke or whatever, right? Or something, like, it's not realistic, and doesn't necessarily, like, especially when it comes to like the fantasy challenge, it's not supposed to be a realistic knife. And
exactly, yeah.
Even the samurai challenge, I mean, who the hell is using a freaking samurai sword nowadays? Like, what's realistic about them?
Yeah, there's, I mean, even the big guys, like, on Dennis's channel, there were even people, you know, all across the board that were like, that's, you can't call that a katana because, you know, you didn't do X, Y, or Z or this and that. You weren't trained by a real katana maker. It's like,
yeah. Well, and you know, like, I can't remember who it was that I saw posting about their build, and they mentioned that they weren't going to use Tom Mahogany because they didn't have the time to source it or to make it. Otherwise, they would have, because they're that, you know, that involved in Japanese culture, that they know how to make their own tomahogany.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, making a katana is like a total art.
Right? Total art. Yeah. Right.
I mean, it's like a way of life.
That wasn't the specified criteria of the rules, right?
Right. Yeah. So,
yeah, that's the part that maybe people are forgetting, that there's, you know, there's rules to a challenge.
Yeah. No, there's a lot of people that really encourage you, and then there's that other end of the spectrum where it's like they just want to kind of slowly chip away at your ego.
I encourage those people though, man, because they help the algorithm, right?
Yeah. Oh, dude, I will take it all day long. I mean, a comment is a comment to that added, you know, comment number. I'll take
ching,
it.
Ching, ching. You got it, brother. Yeah. Right. What have you been doing for the YouTube? Like, is that something that you've been doing for a long time, or did you start it with the knife builds?
I think I started it back like 11 years ago when I first did like a shield giveaway on Facebook. It was like, hey, you know, go subscribe to my YouTube channel, and if you do, you know, you'll be entered to win. Just trying to build it like way back then. But I kind of let it sit dormant for a while. I did some giveaways on there, but it really didn't start cranking it out until, yeah, the fantasy challenge. It was like, let's get that YouTube back up. Start posting some videos over there.
So I apologize. I did not look at how many followers you have on, or how many subscribers you have on YouTube, but how are you doing on the YouTube here? I'm just going to check it out right now.
It's starting to grow, and I will definitely attribute that to the
3,000 subscribers, yeah. Dude. That's awesome. Yeah. Good job, man.
Thank
that's
you.
Super wicked.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, man. I mean, like, yeah. No, that's so, if you're at 3,000, then you're at a point where you have monetary coming back to you from your sponsor or ad reads or whatever. How does that work with YouTube?
With YouTube so far, what I've seen is it's they pay per 1,000 views. So once you hit 1,000 views, I think it's like you get $4 or $5.
Oh, okay. That's not bad, I suppose. You've been making okay money from YouTube yet, or done right?
You basically get paid when you hit the $100 threshold. Say I finally last month hit my $100 threshold for the first time.
Right. Oh, hey, you got to start somewhere, right?
You do. I mean, you got to get the grind on.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's one of the things that I've kind of looked at with the whole maker community is there's some people that come in, they get frustrated because they're like, why don't I have the growth that other people have? And it's like, well, you know, you got to put in the grind, dude, like in the actual grind. You can't just like, you know, start an account and expect people to come to you. Yeah. You got to make sure you post lots. You got to make sure you engage in the community, make yourself known, you know, become friends with the people that you're, you know, that you think do cool stuff. Try to become friends with those people, talk to them, tell them how much you love their stuff, and try to pick up some hints and tips from them if you can, and share your hints and tips with them if you can, and create that community for yourself, and it'll help you grow. And it's, you know, it's all part of the grind, dude, man. It's something else, dude. But it all comes back to business as well, right? And I'm not too sure how you look at this as far as business related. Are you concerned about making it a business for you, or are you just, you're like, no, it's just a side thing. I'm happy just doing it as a hobby, or...
I mean, I definitely treat it as a business. Through the prop making side of it, it was definitely treated as a business.
That was for sure, obviously.
Yeah. So, I mean, I still kept the LLC, and I'm transitioning that over. Do I think YouTube is going to be a primary source of income? I'm not sure yet. I was hoping to grow it to be at that point, but, you know, the day job definitely keeps me afloat.
Well, is the position that it sounds like you hold, if I know what I know, you're doing all right.
Yeah.
Hey, manufacturing, dude. I mean, there's a lot of people that when we were younger, I mean, how old are you, dude?
I'll be 42 in December.
We're like a couple months apart from each other. I turned 42 in February, man.
Nice.
That's hilarious. Yeah, so... Our generation grew up with this whole idea of like, if you're dumb, then you go into the trades, right?
Right.
But there's so many people that I've come across now that were apparently the smart people that went into engineering, and they will like they come to me and tell us how this works and what do you think of this and this and that, right? And they look up to me for my knowledge, and it's like, yeah, and we were the dumb ones, like, what?
Right.
Yeah. So and we're doing good, right? Like, the money we make, I'm sure the same goes for you, is comparable to what engineers make, because there's a demand for what we do. And
there is, yeah.
I don't know about the engineering market. It might be a little bit flooded.
Yeah. I would say it probably is, for sure. Yeah. And I don't know about you guys up there, but here, at least in Arizona, welders are, at one point, they were a dime a dozen. At this point in time, all those old guys are retiring. All those guys that have all that knowledge, they're getting out of it. And there are not a lot of guys that were, like, getting into welding. So whoever does have knowledge is getting paid really good money.
Oh, my buddy, my cousin Dustin actually runs a mobile welding rig in Tucson, or near Tucson.
That's awesome. Somewhere.
Yeah, man. And he's doing deadly for cash, man. He just rakes it in like mad. It's actually one of the reasons I went into welding is... I got out of college, or when I was in high school, grade 12, it was like, what are you going to do with yourself, right? And it was like, what's hot? What's everybody doing? Computers.
Yep.
My whole family, you got to go into computers. So I went to computer programming. The program I went into was based on accounting, dude. I wanted to shoot myself after a freaking day. I couldn't have it. Yeah, it was brutal. And I didn't even finish the program. I did the first term or the first semester or whatever. And I went to the dean and I was like, this is not what I want to do with my life. And he pulled me aside and he was like, well, do you want to transition into a different program? Because you're more than welcome. Pick another program. What do you want to do? And I honestly, I was like mind blown. I was just like, I don't even know what I want to do anymore. Like, I'm disobeying my family and I feel like I'm gonna be like the black sheep now and no one's gonna want to deal with me and stuff, like, yeah. I've got to go hide. And I turned to being not doing so good for myself for a couple of years there and living in a bit of a shallow hole there, if you may, and eventually crawled out of that hole when somebody introduced me to welding and I found out about my cousin doing welding, making good money. And I was like, well, if these guys are doing it, why can't I? And my family's like, well, if that's what you want to do, then go do it. And I was like, yeah, it sounds like awesome. I love building stuff. I've always loved building stuff. Man, my first day of welding class, it was like, yeah, this is amazing. Yes. Yeah.
That's so awesome.
Yeah, dude. And I will never look back on that, man, because every day that I walk into that shop is because of that decision. I would not, there is no way I would have all of what I'm doing now and metalworking, blacksmithing, all that stuff. It all goes back to that one decision, that those couple of conversations I had with those people that are like, welding, try welding. What do you think of this? And it's like, yeah, all right. You know, so I try to push it on other as many people in the young generation as I can, but at the same time,
that younger generation's kind of like, not to say that they're lazy, but not a lot of them want to work for it.
No, it's an interesting world that we're walking into, man. I'm trying to teach my daughter's 7 right now. You have kids too, right?
Yeah, I do.
How old are your kids?
6, 10, and 14.
Oh, wow. 3 kids. And that's like 6, 10, and 14. 4 years apart, each one of them. Dude, that's interesting. That was hard work, I bet.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
It still is. 6, 10, 14. Okay, so is the 14-year-old kind of doing a lot of helping out, making things happen?
Like no other. She's not only helping out, like, with, because we homeschool the kids. I mean, it's remote learning. They're still going to school, but just through a laptop at home.
Okay.
But she helps the other two little ones. And then she's got her own, like, side hustle that she's trying to do, which is great. Like, I'm trying to push them on, like, hey, you know, school's good to get knowledge for the basic stuff, but like, if you want to do something for your life, like, you got to figure out what you like to do and let's push you into that.
So this is kind of what I was getting to, is that it's, I think that people like us, I look at somebody like Brian House as somebody that I really look up to when it comes to this too, is his inspiration and pushing to work hard, and what we are producing now for the younger generation, what his son is, what our mm-hmm. children will become. We are creating a generation that is, we're going to have to watch out, man. The amount of hard work that these kids are going to produce is going to be something else. It's going to transform this world. I hope.
Dude, I hope so.
We need a change. Enough politics. We're talking politics.
No, it's not. You know, it's not even that politics. It's just like, I don't know what it is. It's kids that kind of grow up seeing the YouTube generation of like, if I post a video, I can make, you know, a lot of money on that. Yeah. You know, not to say that like someone like Mr. Beast is doing anything wrong, but you know, he posts a video and he breaks in mad money, which sounds awesome. You know, even on TikTok, you post a video, you can make money on there. But I think it's that generation that's growing up seeing that as a way to generate an income.
Well, I think it might have started a little bit sooner than that, honestly. I think it started in the And not to point fingers, man, but I think music has a lot to do with that. The music industry, the entertainment industry. You see rap stars living absolutely lavish lifestyles, not seemingly having to work all that hard, having an absolute blast. You see sports stars living crazy lavish lives, and you don't understand the hard work that goes into what a sports star. No one understands the hard work unless you are, and nobody is that isn't, right? So you don't understand the hard work that goes into that. You think it's easy. You think these guys play a hockey game once a night or a basketball game once a night, and outside of that, it's just party, 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 and it's like, right.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah. through high school, me and my brothers, we did, even before high school, but it was like baseball, track, football.
Yeah.
And yeah, you would think it's like, oh yeah, you play one game, you make a lot of money, but you're talking about months and months of training in the heat to be able to play them. But yeah, you know, you do have a point, you know, seeing these people that just pop up in a music video and they can bang.
Yeah, I think that's where it kind of started, and then YouTube rolled in, and people that were kind of watching these rap stars and these entertainment people doing really well for themselves, living lavish lifestyles, they're like, I can do that too. All I have to do is put myself on YouTube, and boom, bada, bing, bada, boom, and it all freaking rolls around, right? And then you get every kid nowadays that it's like, well, if they can do it, so can I.
Right. And
but so our kids, though, they're growing up watching what that generation did, that generation that we're talking about that had it so easy that all you have to do is start posting videos on YouTube. And there's like a pattern that's been established in this world before when it comes to that hard times create easy times and easy times create the hard times, and it cycles over again or whatever,
back and forth.
Right. And I think that's part of what we're seeing right now with that cycle of the hard times create the easy times, and we're back to, you know, creating the hard times again right now.
Yep.
Frick. And we're polishing our kids to create a world that will once again be easy times, hopefully, because, man, me and you, 42, we grew up at what I want to say was the pinnacle of civilization so far.
I think so, dude. I would agree with that statement for sure.
Yeah, I think there's probably a lot of people listening right now that are probably like, yes! Wait. Get back to the shop talk, man, because I feel like, you know, we're probably borderlining politics here, right? But okay, it's becoming a business for you. It's been a business for you in the past. So you understand how business works. When you look at this as a business going forward, do you see certain aspects of it that are, you know, this, there's this certain objective that you have to reach, certain things you have to do in order for to make all this come together? And what might some of those objectives be?
Oh, man. You know, before with the props, I just kind of took it as it came. You know, when people wanted to put an order in for something, I would, you know, you could kind of see the flood coming in, like, oh, people really like this item, and that's what I'm going to be making a lot of. Right now, transitioning into the sword, cleaver, knife making, I'm kind of like deviating away from that and just making what I think is cool.
Yeah.
So I don't really know at this point. There's no real definitive, like, this is the way I'm going to go. Because it's like, yeah, it'd be great to have, you know, a bunch of cleavers made, and a bunch of swords made, and a bunch of knives made, and then head to, like, Blade Show and sell them there. Because that would be the equivalent of, like, going to Comic-Con. But I don't know. You know, right now it's just learn as much as I can, invest as much as I can in collaborations, in the challenges, things like that. Because, you know, before the Fantasy Challenge, followers on YouTube weren't really that great. Views on YouTube, those videos weren't getting a lot of views. But once that first one hit, it was like it started rolling. You know, it's getting another 1,000 views for the next challenge, another, or not views, but subscribers, and another 1,000 subscribers for the next challenge. So it's like, that seemed to be the way that I'm kind of proceeding. You know, keep going with the challenges and try and grow the YouTube base.
Yeah.
And, you know, document every build, post it to YouTube, and if I sell the build, I can also make revenue off of the build video.
How are you going about documenting the builds? What are you using? Are you using a DSL camera? Do you have a...
Yeah, DSL. Just one single. I think it's a Canon. I'm not even sure what model. It's a couple of years old. I'll know that.
So how does that work? Take me into the world of doing this, because I'm familiar with it in a certain aspect. I used to snowboard a lot, and we used to record our snowboarding and make videos. Same idea as YouTube, right? I mean, we posted to YouTube. Don't go looking up my snowboarding videos on YouTube, please. but with the snowboarding, it was hectic, dude. It was so hard to get everything organized, because you would be out there filming. Like, we would try to do the same trick 100 times. And then you would have to take those 100 clips, post them to the computer, and find the ones that were decent and try to find the good one. And right. And it was like, back then it was a headache. There was, you know, certain tricks that we would do, like slamming our hand to the camera when we landed a good trick, so that when you're watching the video, you would watch for that hand.
You know, that's the cue.
Yeah, you know it, right?
That's
yeah. So, but with doing YouTube videos and knife making and a DSL, you have the ability to pause it. You have the ability to catalog your things in ways. Do you have a method to your madness, or how do you go about doing that?
Not really. It's just set it up, hit record, and do whatever process I'm going to do and hope that it saves to the camera.
There's that one too, Frick.
But yeah, I mean, there's like, I don't know how many memory cards that I have, that it's like, you definitely want to know like which order you're going in, or else later on when you're throwing gigabytes and gigabytes worth of video into your computer, you're like, wait, did this come before that, or that come before this? Without having to sit there and watch every single one of them.
Do you wait till the very end to upload all your stuff then?
For the Fantasy Challenge, and I unfortunately did. And it was, dude, it was hours of like taking like, I don't even know how many gigs it was, and transferring it to the computer and just sitting there and watching this little ticker go. Just to transfer it. And then from there, you still have to, you know, edit it and go through it and cut it all down. But now I'm kind of at that point where it's like, you know, I can shoot it, you know, I'll do whatever process I'm doing that day. And at the end of the day, I take that card, and I'll slap it in the computer, and then I'll break it all down into, you know, like whatever step I was doing that day or steps I was taking that day.
So do you label your files on the computer itself specifically, or do you have like a numbering system where you write it down, or how do you go about organizing your files on the computer?
I'll leave the original name, like that it's saved to the memory card, the way that it is. That way I know that they're in consecutive order. But I will basically take folders that I group each one in. So say like I'm going to go and, you know, work on the blade today and grind the, you know, primary grinds. I'll throw that into one folder, and then, you know, say I'm going to work on the handles the next day, so I'll throw that into another folder. And then I'll know like inside that folder for the grinds of the handle, boom, they're all in order.
Nice. Nice. So all makes sense to me, man. Very cool. Yeah. I have not bothered to try to do that level of videography documentary for any sort of my metalwork ever before. And for snowboarding, it was definitely different than that, man. Definitely. It was a matter of like throw everything into one folder and hopefully be able to start breaking it apart into what spots we were at, because sometimes we would record like 20 different spots on one, you know, memory card or whatever, and we'd go to break it down and be like, okay, whatever, it's too much work, and we'll just pick out the couple clips. It becomes a headache, man. Organization is fucking key to that kind of stuff.
Oh, for sure. For sure, yeah. If you don't want to go pulling your hair out all day, organization is definitely the way to go. I will say that, like, every now and then I'll work in these, like, intros where I'll talk first before, you know, what I do to kind of explain this is what step we're going to do next. I'll pop that in the YouTube video. That is where I'm on the same page as your snowboarding video, where I'm not really that great talking in front of a camera, so I'll have to say something 30 different times and then sit there and like pick out and kind of clip it down to where it's like, all right, that sounds like I know what I'm talking about, or I didn't stutter here or say too many times.
Yep.
So when it hits that point, yeah, then it gets hard. But as far as the work recording, it's like, if you're going to grind a blade, there's no, oh, you didn't do it right on this one. Let's do it again, because you've already ground into that metal. It's already there.
Do you have any tricks when it comes to doing those talks so that you can kind of maybe get around having those stuttering moments and stuff like that? Is there anything that you can utilize when it comes to that?
Scripts for sure. Having a script down. When I first did the fantasy challenge and builds before that, I would just do a voiceover. Like I would edit all the footage and then kind of sit there with my little microphone and then just talk, kind of like if you watched Jimmy DiResta at all,
yeah,
kind of talk over what he does and, you know, each step. That's kind of the process I was doing. But once I started incorporating these parts where I'm putting myself in front of camera and talking, script was definitely the way to like to make sure, because I would break down what I want to say, make sure I hit each point. And if I don't, I can say that, you know, first sentence or first paragraph a couple times, just make sure I've got at least a good solid portion here at the beginning,
yeah,
a good solid at the end.
So you're going off of a memory basis, then you're not like having that scroll down on a screen behind the camera,
no,
or something like,
no,
that, like Hollywood style.
Piece of paper on the table in front of me.
I mean, you could get away with like, you know, a big whiteboard or something like that behind the camera,
good,
and,
yeah,
and write it on that, right? And
absolutely.
As long as you're looking towards the camera for the most part, you're okay.
Yeah. Yeah, keeping eye contact with that lens was definitely a learning experience for me. Because it's like, you know, when you communicate to someone, you're staring into their eyes, and it's a weird thing to stare into an object, the round circular lens, and try and keep a straight face and talk.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I have noticed that, like, I do a lot of Instagram videos, right? So I have noticed that with Instagram videos that one of the things that drives me nuts is when you're looking at your phone doing a video, and then you're done the video, you can totally watch your eyes scroll down to hit the end button, right?
Yep.
I don't know why, but it drives me nuts to see that. I'm guilty of it. It's brutal. There's nothing you can do about it, really. I mean, other right. than edit it out afterwards, right?
Look, yeah, just clip it a little bit short.
Yeah, make no. You gotta watch the camera after you're done talking for like an extra couple seconds and be like, okay, I looked at the camera long enough. Now I can look at end and hit end.
Right.
And then edit it out. Are you doing reels at all? Are you on the reels, or is that something they're hot on?
Yeah, on Instagram reels, yeah.
Yeah. What kind of stuff are you leaning on for reels?
Basically, we're all just show the build, you know, whether it's, because most of the time when I do a sheath, I'll have some way to keep it on your belt, or like with the Samurai Challenge, I made this back harness that went around my shoulders. You could strap them and pull them out kind of like that.
Yeah,
that's kind of like what the reels are. Just a vertical layout of, you know, me kind of holding it and showing it off.
So you're just doing like process videos then?
Yeah.
Yeah. You find yourself like you're in the heat of the moment. You're like, wait a minute. It's real time, baby. This is it, right?
Yeah.
Do you get those moments? It's kind of that.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a big thing like years ago. It was the stories on Instagram had just come out. It was like, oh, it's fucking time to do a story. Let's, you know, whatever process I'm doing right now, we'll pop that up on there real quick.
There's a lot of people that are still hot on the stories, man. And I don't even freaking like, I don't even see stories at all on YouTube or on Instagram anymore or on Facebook. Like it's like, why are people even still doing these? Like, who sees this stuff?
Exactly, yeah. So, I mean, when you make a post on Instagram, you can also just share it to story. And I do that just because it's like, if people still watch these, here, just see the post I just made, but in story mode.
Huh. Interesting. Yeah. I don't think I noticed that I've got that option. I'm going to double check that. Because I don't post fucking anything to stories because that's
exactly
what I just said. I'm like, who even watches stories? Like, no one looks at that, right?
Yeah, they were hot things back in the day, but not so much. Not anymore. Yeah.
Every once in a while, I'll get sucked into a story because I'll see, like, oh, somebody posted, like, something really cool, and it's not an actual post. It's a story, and I clicked on it, and it's like, oh, okay. And then next thing you know, you're watching, like, 10 different pictures scroll through or whatever, different things scrolling through, and it's like, oh, I've been wasting my time again on Instagram. Frick, get the fuck out of my face, Jesus. Yeah, I'm so bad for getting sucked into the reels, man, and like half an hour later I'm like, what have I done with my life?
Yeah, I had to I had to kind of like clean up my Instagram from a lot of like junk and just see what I want to see. Like a lot of the knife makers and people that I aspire to watch, who are basically, when I go on Instagram, all I see is inspirational stuff. Like stuff that like, that's a cool knife. That's a cool sword. Yo, look at how he made that sheath, you know, stuff like that.
And you know what, man, that's exactly how I play my game, and I've apologized to people about it before. I don't follow a lot of knife guys, even people I'm friends with that I don't follow their work on Instagram under my main account. I'll follow them on Forge Side Chat, but my Abstract Blacksmith account, I'm like, I've been pretty selective for the most part of who I'm following. There's a few people that I'm knife makers that I'm like, yeah, you know what, I'll let you slip through the cracks because whatever, I'm feeling nice today, I guess, or something, I don't know. And a month later I'm like, why am I following a knife maker on here? Remove. But there are some knife makers that I follow that I am inspired by, and I do look at their work in a way that has artistic value to me beyond what a knife is. And I think that's more or less why I follow those specific people. But When you say you're cleaning up your Instagram, is that what you're talking about? Is you cleaned up the people you're following?
Yeah, yeah. Like got rid of a lot of meme accounts, you know, and had, coming from like the comic book like background, I follow, I have a bunch of friends that are all artists in the comic book industry, but it's like, I'm kind of going away from that now and going towards the knife stuff. So I really want to delve myself into like seeing stuff that, you know, looks really cool.
There's a way to keep them as to keep following them, but you can make it so that they're not, their stuff doesn't pop up in your feed. There's an option.
Oh, that would be cool.
There is an option for that.
Has that option.
Yeah.
To still be friends, but you don't have to like see all
actually see their shit. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, if you go look, we're friends. See, hi, but I don't fucking follow your stupid goddamn fucking pottery shit. Or no, I like pottery. Pottery's awesome. Never mind. I don't know what I'm saying there.
Cool.
Yeah, some ceramic shit's fucking rad, dude. I've got some up on my shelf that I've bought from local artists. Actually, I like ceramic stuff.
Nice. I think it's called Hammerly Ceramics. I still follow him on Instagram.
Oh yeah, cool. What are some of the other things that you look at for inspiration outside of the knife world and obviously comics? What else outside of that kind of stuff? You were going to say comics, weren't you? You're like, oh, this is easy.
It was. Cause I mean, you know, in comics, they pull in a lot of really cool weapons, whether it be or apocalyptic or, you know, Egyptian kind of stuff.
You can make comic book weapons for the rest of your life and never accomplish all of them. Not even close.
No, not at all.
So fair enough that there's inspiration drawn from there, which is easy. That's the easy one. There's got to be inspiration outside of that, though, man. Outside of the knife makers, some things you look at in this world that. You know, are you a sunset guy? Are you into flowers? Is it animals? What is it that catches your eye in this world?
Well, we have, I want to say 30 different species of tarantula in the room that I'm sitting in right now.
Whoa. That's something different. What the fuck, dude?
Yeah, we got reptiles too. All kinds of good stuff.
Okay. So, where did that start and why? And give me some background here, bud. What's going on? What is 32, you said?
I want to say about there, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, my wife, she does, like insect taxidermy. She does all kinds of taxidermy, but she's big into the reptiles and spiders and snakes. Back in high school, I had a rose hair tarantula, and like we just kind of bonded over that. Like, yo, it's... get you stocked up with some really cool looking stuff.
That's rad, dude. So you guys have been together since high school?
Oh, no, we've been together about 8-9 years now, but back in high school is when like I got my tarantula and that started my fix. I had friends that had reptiles and they also collected like tarantulas and spiders and stuff like that.
Oh yeah,
so that's cool. That's where it started for me,
dude. Taxidermy on tarantulas, that's got to be rad shit, man.
Oh yeah, like we've got those little rhino beetles, you know, with the big horn on the front of them. She's got those that she like, you know, puts behind glass and, you know, puts like flowers in it around them.
And she sells that stuff, dude.
Oh yeah,
dude.
Huge praying mantises. I'm talking like 6-8 inches big.
Instagram account, what is it? Come on, she's got to have one.
Dreadfully Steph, it should still be. Because I know she changed a couple times. Dude, she, like, kind of like me, where I kind of, like, jump from jewelry to props to knives. She got dreadlocks. She does dreadlocks. Like I said, she does a Cerakote for me. She's a painter. She's an oil painter. She does a taxidermy. She does all kinds of stuff.
ADD much?
Oh, yeah. Dreadfully Steph, yeah. Yeah, it's still her name.
Cool, dude.
I know she goes through that little area of like, oh, I want to change what my handle is.
Yeah. Well, no, I get that, man. That's No, the and talking about the, you know, going from this to going to that to going to this, man. That's honestly kind of a bit of a bane of mine, dude, when it comes to trying to run a business. Again, focus, right? Focus, yep. Planning, having set goals. These are things that are very, very important when it comes to running a business. And I'm terrible with these things, man. I'm like, I want to do this. No, I want to do that. Oh, yeah, yep. I forgot I wanted to do that.
Oh, dude, you've got to have a different hat for like each aspect of it too. It's like, do you want to create today? Do you want to record today? Do you want to do business stuff today? Do you want to market?
You know, go with the flow, dude.
Yeah, I mean that's on top of like, you know, what did I want to make today? What should I make today? What stuff has the wife got that you haven't made for her yet?
that's what it comes down to. What do I want to do today? What is it that I did want to do today that I told myself yesterday that I wanted to do today, but I want to do something different today now? Oh wait, the wife wants me to do something, scrap it, I'm doing that instead.
Yeah
that happens way too often. Oh well. Yeah, you know what?
At least her honey-do list is like fun stuff. Like, hey, make me a pendant that's like a broadhead that she can wear around her neck for jewelry.
Well, that's fucking rad.
She also does archery too. I don't know if you can see, like, there's like probably six or seven.
Oh yeah, I see one up there.
Yeah,
dude, that is a sick bow. Wow.
Yeah, she is a bowyer as well. There's
what the.
Seven bows in this room and probably like 12 more out in the garage.
Holy and the backyard. Shit. And she makes them.
A lot of them she purchases, but yeah, she's getting into the making part of it now.
That's so fucking cool, dude. You guys, man. Wow. Busy lives, eh?
It's a trip. It's a trip. Especially, you know, with kids too. It's like, hey, there's so many different things you guys can reach out and grab onto.
No kidding, dude. No kidding, man. Have you been in Arizona your whole life?
Yeah, born and raised.
In Mesa?
Yeah, around the Mesa area, Mesa and Gilbert. Yeah.
Have you traveled much outside of Mesa ever, or you've been pretty
like
much...
Like around the Arizona state? Yeah, we've gone, you know, Payson, Flagstaff, Tucson. We had our honeymoon there. Tucson's a really cool place to go. I know you said you had, was it a cousin or a brother that lived there?
I have a cousin and an uncle that lives. I think my uncle still lives there. I'm not too sure where he's at lately, man. He's like great uncle kind of thing. He's like 90 something now. I don't even know where he's at anymore. Yeah, but that's my cousin's dad.
Nice. Yeah, no, Tucson's a great fucking place.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I've been there once way long ago. Back in 2000, I was there. Yeah, very rad. I was lucky. But that's what I mean. Like, I got super lucky when I was younger. I got to travel quite a bit down into the States with my grandparents and my parents at the time. And seeing all that different shit opened my eyes to this world, dude. It was like, I grew up in northern Manitoba, man. And there's like, it's everywhere is trees and kind of some little hills, nothing much. And going to the mountains, going to BC, dude, it was like, holy shit, this is amazing. I want to move to the mountains so bad. This is so cool. And then when I went on my trip to the States and I saw, you know, we went through the Badlands, we went through the Grand Canyon, we went through Las Vegas, we went through the Sierra Nevadas, nice. Went through New Mexico, I so many freaking cool things, dude, and it changed my perspective on this world, you know, like seeing how different houses are built and different people live and stuff like that, and the different styles of highways and fucking highways with fucking 75 mile per hour speed limits, dude.
Right?
Like, what the fuck?
Yeah, you go from diversity of like these little tiny podunk towns that are like 35 miles an hour to like 75 mile per hour highways.
Yeah.
And people are still flying past you.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy, man. Ah, it's dude. True. Yeah, this world. So, but that's what I'm, when I was asking you, have you traveled much outside of Mesa? Is there anywhere that you've gone that has given you that perspective on this world? Is there something that has like really been like an eye opener to you ever?
Yeah, I went to New York. Jeez.
Oh yeah.
Back in the day, and that was a trip. Like, you know, we have Phoenix here, which isn't that far. It's maybe half hour away. There's skyscrapers and city, you know, buildings. But going to New York, dude. We had stayed with my friend's family member, and they were like upstate, like Yonkers, I think was the area. And it was all like forests and trees and real nice greenery. It's like, wow, this can be New York, because all I see is like cities and movies. Right. And then when you go into the actual city and you walk down a row of skyscrapers, and like you take a turn and like all of a sudden the sun is blocked out and the wind is just hauling ass through and like blowing you one way, and seeing the people everywhere, that was a total culture shock for me. It was like, oh shit.
How old are you when you did that? Nonstop.
What's that?
How old are you when you did that?
I want to say 17 or 18.
Yeah, man. That huge culture shock right there. That's exactly what I'm talking about, man. It does something to you, eh?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. It's crazy to sit there and think like these people live like this and they work like this, and this is their daily life, just like hauling ass from this building to that building and hopping on a subway and traveling. Like, yo.
Yeah. No, it's something that I encourage for a lot of, especially young people, man, to try to give yourself that culture shock. Do,
yeah.
The thing that I push on my kid all the time, do something that scares you.
Exactly.
More often than not, like try to do things that scare you, push yourself, push your limits. Same thing goes with making, dude, push your limits, do things that scare you, right?
Yep, exactly.
What's the next thing that you're looking at that's, you're going to push yourself on? What are you scared of doing? That's next?
What am I scared of doing?
But I don't think something you know you're going to do, but you're scared of. It's going to push your limits.
Working with tool steel and heat treating was definitely that baby step that I was scared of. And at this point, I mean, heat treating 1095 for the Samurai Challenge was my, what, second, third, and fourth time of heat treating. I don't feel like I'm an expert at it, but I feel confident more than I was. But I mean, what next step that kind of intimidates me? I mean, it would definitely be forging, but dude, I don't have like, you know, an anvil or power hammers or even, you know, anything to try and strike steel and form it. Yeah, I do know, like,
but that's easy, dude.
Like, I don't know.
Like,
because okay. Dude, I see
you
so
have
like,
a forge.
Yeah, but like even the guys that know how to do this and they have, you know, cracks, you know, or delams or anything like that. It's, I don't know. I guess that would be the scary part, is making that step to actually forging metal, doing Damascus.
Damascus is a little bit, that's a huge leap from trying foraging to trying Damascus, though.
Well, yeah, but I mean, it's like once you hit that point where you're slapping metal and forming metal, it's like, all right, well, let's start folding it. Let's start playing with it. I mean, that would be my hand in hand. It's like once that happens, we're starting Damascus.
I get you, buddy. But, I get you.
You know
where you want to go. You want to do it. I can tell. This is it. This is what I'm talking about.
But it's like to have, you know, it's like being a kid and like doing something that you need to hold someone's hand and show you how to do it first.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably that point where I'm at.
With that next step. It can be such a fucking massive like milestone to take that step and find out the right person
right.
that works with right. you and who you are as a person too, because it, okay. When I told you I went and I worked with Justin to make my first knife, right? I was selective on that. There was a few people that I was looking at that I'm like, okay, I was really, really, really considering going to work with Chris Green in Calgary. I don't know Chris from a hole in the wall. I've never really met the guy before. I've had a conversation with him. I know Justin. I've had a lot of time spent with him. I'm familiar with him. I'm a weird person, dude. I get weird around people. That familiarity with Justin was the ticket for me saying, yeah, let's go with Justin. Because there's another guy local too, Brendan Elliott. I was talking to him. I was like, I would really love to spend some time with you and get you to show me how to make a knife. We were kind of trying to work it out. And with Justin, it was just like, no, this is just, it's meant to be, dude. I know you. You know me. I like your style. We're compatible. There's a level of compatibility there with us that we were able to work together.
That's awesome.
And finding that right person, dudes. Okay. So for you, there's somebody that you're looking at that you're like, okay, I know this person. Or this is the person I want to teach me. Do you got that person?
No, not at all. I mean, like I said, like Matt Reed with Magnum Works is the one that kind of held my hand through.
I was expecting you to say Matt. That's what I was expecting you to say. I was going to be like, oh yeah, of course, Matt.
But yeah, I don't know, man. I'm not into the world enough to know like that should be the person to do, you know, to follow or to even ask for help for, you know what I mean?
Mm, I get you, buddy. Well, you said Schwartz Forge is near you, right? Was it Schwartz that you said was near you? Or Schwartz?
Oh, Travis Schwartz.
Schwartz, yeah, Travis Schwartz. He's near you. That's like high-end shit right there, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I know he does hammer-ins every now and then, but I don't know.
Been,
it's like,
have you been to hammer-in yet?
No, not at all.
Oh, dude. Okay. Here we go. Hammer-ins by far are one of the biggest stepping stones you can take in the blacksmithing knife making world, dude. Let me tell you about one of the biggest ones that you have the possibility of attending. Abana's 50th anniversary, dude. It's coming up June 6th to 9th, 2024 in Johnstown, Pennsylvania. One of the highlights is going to be a team forging competition, dude. Teams will be given 4 hours to forge a piece of their own design. Then there's going to be a panel of judges that are going to award the top three teams a total of $2,000 in prizes. $2,000 in prizes, bro! So grab a few friends. Wow. Go visit Abana.org. You'll see that there's all the information about the details about the event are there.
Spell it out.
Abana, A-B-A-N-A dot okay. O-R-G. Go to Sweet. Their website. Get the details. Go there. Don't be square. Unless you got sponge pants. Then you can be
yeah,
square.
Right?
Dude, I'm hyped for this event. 50th anniversary, dude. That's Abana. Great. It's gonna be. And I've found out recently from one of our previous episodes that Arapach's birthday is actually aligned with the event. So expect a shindig of an event. Dude, if you have the opportunity to go to that, and I know that that's from Arizona to Pennsylvania is like a journey beyond, but Johnstown, dude, Center for Metal of Arts is there. Pat Quinn runs Center for Metal of Arts. I don't know if you know about Center for Metal of Arts.
No.
I'm saying it so like I'm all center of, center for, center with. Anyways, this place is mind-blowing. We're talking hammers, power hammers that you can walk underneath of, dude.
This
place is huge. It's like Johnstown was known as like one of the like main steel manufacturing hubs of North America for the longest time. I'm pretty sure it's still very well known for its steel industry, but like this where the center is was one of like the big big manufacturers for steel back in the day. And they've got these huge power hammers there. They've got accommodations there for people. If they come to take courses there, they bring in amazing people for demonstrations and classes and stuff like that. And that's where Urbana is going to be having their 50th anniversary, is in that same city. You can check out all of that in Johnstown while you're there for the 50th anniversary, dude. I can't stop recommending this, dude. It's like, hey, pipe.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, if only you could have seen the video there. Jeez. It's like, I'm so glad I don't record this for the public. Oh, God. I have started doing a couple of lives on Instagram on the weekends. I've done a couple now where I sat down with, first was Soulforge out of Ireland, and then the second one was with Spider Eye Forge out of Missouri. Dude, if you have the chance to go and check those out, I've posted them live on the Facebook, the Forgeside Chat Instagram account. There's some really, really awesome information in both of those live conversations. I'm not considering them episodes of Forgeside Chat necessarily. I have been considering taking the audio from them, editing it into an actual episode, but I haven't done that yet. Yeah. You think that's worthwhile?
Dude, I totally would, yeah.
There you go. Okay.
Done deal. Content's content, dude. Do it up.
Content is content. Okay. What are you, Brian House, right now? Get out of my freaking head, dude. Jeez, this guy. He recently posted something about having to focus and just stop thinking about things and go and do it. Dude, I've been sick for like 2 weeks. Not able to fucking work because my energy level's shit. I'm like, all I can do is think. And I got myself to a point where I was like, you're thinking too much, dude. This is not good. Like, and then I saw his post and I was like, what the fuck, Brian? Get the fuck out of my head. I'm swearing a lot. Jeez, I've had 2 beers, dude. I gotta settle down here. I'm sorry. And I'm doing all the talking. Tell me a good story, dude. Give me something juicy.
Oh, fuck. I don't know. What do you want to know?
I don't know. Tell me about something that you've done in your life that would, like, give me a story that would be like, wow, dude, that's amazing. I want to hear an amazing story. Come on. There's got to be something that you've done probably in your younger years before you had kids and you were on your wild side.
Something that I did that was a wow factor thing. I don't know, man. Not really much. Like, I did sports as a kid. You know, I'm a nerd, so I was kind of a homebody, hung out with just like the close-knit group of friends. Didn't really like light any cars on fire or anything wild like that.
That sounds like you lit a car on fire.
Although being in Arizona, there's a lot of desert, a lot of good shooting areas, but no, unfortunately, no cars got lit. Blood on fire.
That's something that you might consider being normal that is very abnormal though, dude. And I
really?
And I do know that about Arizona. Like, I've had friends that have moved to Arizona specifically for that. A friend of mine that lived here in Winnipeg with me for a while, not lived with me, but we worked together anyways, he moved to Arizona specifically because he was like, yeah, dude, I can have like AK-47s and grenade launchers and shit. Yep. He lived like out in the desert, right? And I was like, no. And he's like, oh, fuck yeah. So then no one gives a fuck about anything out here.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. That ain't happening in Canada, dude. No way, man. The cops would be... You'd be so fucked if anybody caught wind of you having any of those items. You'd be like, although I'm sure there are people, like I've known people that have things they shouldn't have. So I'm sure there's people that have those level of things. I don't know people that know those that have. Okay. there's a certain level of you're not allowed to do that I know of. I don't know of that level of you're not supposed to do.
Right.
I mean, I've walked into a room where the table was laid out in like $100 bills and $50 bills and stacks of duffel bags in the corner. And I was like, I'm in the wrong room. I'm out of here. But yeah, I don't know anybody that has like an AK-47, and you're like, oh yeah, that's
yeah. Arizona, oh, dude. Oh, that's Arizona. Yeah.
So you,
yeah, especially the group of friends that I grew up with, shit, as a kid with my dad and his friends, and then my friends growing up as well, and then their dads, like, you get like generations of rifles and guns and all kinds of stuff handed down, you know, on top of the ones that you're buying now.
So you've lit a car on fire.
No. Wink, wink. I mean, there are cars out in the desert that you can go shoot, but like none of them still have like engines in them or like gas tanks full of gas. But you know, you go out there.
Don't fill them with jerry cans full of gas to shoot at.
No, Tannerite's really fun.
Tannerite. There you go. Yeah. Attaboy. You are cool.
But yeah, no, I for my first Comic-Con that I took the shields to, I got a lot of the kids that come up that are like, oh, can you shoot a bullet at that? I'm like, well, yeah, but it's aluminum, so it's not really going to stop much, but maybe a paintball gun or a BB. And after hearing, you know, kids come up and ask that enough, me and my buddies took one of the shields out to the desert and shot it from 22 all the way up to the 50 cal.
Just to bring in as an example and showcase, yeah. This is,
yeah,
what
just bring it in and be like, yeah, man, this is just a little prop. It's not going to stop much.
See, this is one of the reasons why I'm kind of really happy that we've decided to delve outside of Canada for some of our conversations, because you're not the first person I've talked to about this kind of stuff. Clark Iron Forge, dude. But go listen to his episode. He was telling us about air guns, man. Wow. Some of shit sounds fucking rad. I would not mind having an air gun. That's for sure from the sounds of it. There's still heavy regulations on that stuff in Canada, though, apparently.
Even air guns up there?
Yeah, yeah. What it is anything over a certain velocity... on a certain gauge, I think, or something, is how it is rated in Canada. So it doesn't even fucking matter what gun it is, as long as it is within those parameters, they can base it off of that and be like, yeah, no bueno.
Hey. Yeah, I mean, you guys hunt up there, right?
Yeah, we hunt. I'm kind of just getting into it now at this point in my life. I haven't been into it. Is that something you do?
Not personally. I mean, we've bought, as a kid, yeah, you know, went out with hunts and my dad, you know, like the buddies that we go out shooting with, they will go out for weeks on end and have a spot picked out, and they've already got trail cams, have been scoping the whole area out.
Right.
But no, I'm not that far. Not too bad.
Not yourself. What about your wife with the bows?
Yeah. No, turkey and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice. That's awesome. That's me personally, I would rather bow hunt versus hunt with a gun. That's right. What I want to get into. Although that idea gets really scary when you start thinking about wild pigs.
Oh yeah. Yeah, we got javelina here, but I don't think that's nearly as large as the wild pigs you guys might have up there.
Apparently the wild boar up here range between 5 to 1,000 pounds. 500 to 1,000 pounds.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, javelina here.
600 pounds is like a normal size pig.
Oh, that's big. I mean, you guys have like huge ass like fucking moose too, right? I mean, that should like come
over. Oh, dude, a moose is like 2,000 pounds.
This thing's like, I've seen a video of those walking next to a truck and it's like dwarfing.
Yep.
An F-250. I'm like, holy shit.
Yep. Yeah, I rolled up beside a family of three of them. And the smallest of the three of them was making my truck. We felt small in my truck next to the baby. I was like, wow. Yeah, and dude, and then the craziest thing is they kind of get spooked a little bit. They're walking alongside you like nothing's happening, walking right in front of you like whatever. And then I don't even know what it was. Didn't do anything different. They got spooked and decided to start trampling through the forest, plowing down trees that my truck wouldn't plow down, dude.
Holy
just
shit.
Running straight through them like it's nothing. It's like,
yeah, fuck that noise.
Yeah. So I've got an elk taxidermy elk head in my shop. My dad gave it to me from it was his back in the day. They had it in the office back in the day. They don't have the office anymore, so he hooked me up with the elk head. I've got it up on top of a cabinet. The other day I'm moving some stuff and I happened to rock the cabinet and it rolled and fell off and the antler hit me in the head from maybe a foot. Maybe it was a foot of a fall. And I was like, holy fuck, man. If that had like actual force behind it, wow. No, what? These things would fuck you up,
dude,
man.
They would have killed the shit out of you. They'd pick you up and take you for a ride.
Oh, hell yeah, for sure. Well, I've seen videos of that. That's scary as fuck.
Yeah.
What do you guys hunt in Arizona? You said turkey. What else can you guys hunt there?
Pretty much anything and everything. Like we got black bear. We've got elk.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
No.
Yeah, my buddy and he got his black bear first and then she got drawn. I want to say the next year or the second year after him and she got her black bear.
What?
And we got
okay.
coyotes. We got foxes. Like coyotes are running up and down the neighborhood. Like,
coyotes for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Cats and dogs and all that shit around. So it's like those are like if you can get it, just take it.
One. Do you get an anvil with every coyote or
that'd be sweet.
That's
okay. That'd be sweet.
That's Arizona is where all like that's like you see Arizona, you're like, oh yeah, that's where all the coyotes are, and they all have anvils and they're all chasing roadrunners.
Oh. So you know what? Roadrunners don't look like that at all.
No, they're small, aren't they?
They're tiny, man. They're tiny, yeah.
Yeah. And they are not that fast either.
I mean they're fast, but not like in the cartoon.
Right. Like a coyote is actually faster than a roadrunner, isn't it?
I'd say a coyote could have a roadrunner pretty freaking easy.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm pretty sure statistically a roadrunner is a much slower animal than a coyote is. Okay. When you say Arizona, like what I remember of Arizona was like pretty bleak desert, dude. To think that there was black bears there,
yeah,
and stuff like that. Like you guys got Arizona, good forested areas.
Arizona's a big state, like up north, like with the Grand Canyon.
Yeah,
that's still part of Arizona, and there's from there south to about halfway, it's pretty forestry. You know, like I'm in Mesa, which is just outside Phoenix. We're around the central area of Arizona. The further south you go, it definitely goes like desert, mountainous desert, but desert.
Yeah.
North of us, maybe about 45 minutes, you know, you'll hit Flagstaff, Payson, Prescott, like you're already in the forest. Sorry, that
okay.
And I mean, from where we're at now, it'll be 120 degree summers to, you know, moderately cold winters. But if you go up to those other areas where the forest is, it's snowing like wintertime.
Yeah.
It's definitely
no. Cold. I've heard there's a ski hill in Arizona, actually.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Quite a few.
Oh, really? Oh, wow.
Yeah. A lot of ski in Arizona.
Well, that's pretty rad, dude. I guess. When I was driving through there with my family, I just kind of like pictured like, okay, we're not in the desert anymore, so we're not in Arizona.
Right.
Well, that's rad, dude. Yeah, man. Bows, dude. That's something that fucking really turns my crank, man. I keep seeing that one in the background that's up on the wall at the top there, man. And I'm just like, that's a big bow too, isn't it?
Yeah, that's my PSC. 55 pound. I'm trying to turn you far enough to see. Yeah, it's barely turned. It's like,
yeah, I see there's more over there. Yeah.
Yeah. A couple recurves over there. And then more on this wall here.
Holy smokes. Recurves. Wow. Wow, dude. Gnarly. Crazy, man. That's awesome, dude. So what's going to happen with the knife making, dude? Is it going to turn into something that you're going to really embellish on, man? I know we kind of were on that before, and I want to go back to it now, but I feel like you've got the right gig for it, man, and you're on the right journey, dude. And
I feel like it. I hope so. Yeah. I mean, I definitely am going to keep pursuing it. Like, I'm going to give it as much as I can, for sure.
Well, what else can you do? Like, what other options are you looking at with yourself, man? What else would you do with yourself outside of that? Do you have anything else?
I mean, other than like making stuff?
Yeah.
Or like types of... No, that's pretty much all I'm really interested in. Like, when I started the prop business, like, I was doing the prop swords first, and like doing my own kind of fantasy ones, as well as like the He-Man and Thundercats. And that's when like the first inquiry on, hey, can you make a shield? And because those got so popular, that ended up kind of overshadowing everything else, and pretty much took all my time to put towards making shields, which was lucrative, and it was, you know, it was fun, but it's not like where my heart was. Like, shit, when I was a kid, it was always like those hunting knives that you had, or you know, machetes you walk around in the bush to start chopping, you know, sticks.
Yeah,
that was always like fun stuff that I liked. And you know, you grow up and you see like Gil Hibbins, you know, making these fucking really cool knives that are in movies. Kit Ray was a fantasy knife maker, sword maker. That was a big inspiration, and it was like, those are really cool, and I'm a kid, and I can't afford those. So as I got older, I'm like, fuck it, I'll just make my own. So
there you go.
Yeah, if I can keep pursuing that, that's where the heart is, where I have fun.
That's
cool, and it's like, man, just making whatever I think would be cool. You know what I mean? It's not like trying to do what's trendy or what's already been done. And not to say that, like, you know, making a traditional knife the traditional way is a bad thing, but it's like, I want to see stuff that, like, I want to put stuff out there that I haven't seen before.
Yeah.
Kind of where I'm at. You know, the Samurai Challenge was cool, but like I said, I never would have pursued to make a katana or anything like that if it wasn't for that.
Yeah, but you took a really different approach to a katana build that I would say puts you in that aspect of something you haven't really seen before.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think you accomplished what you would you say is kind of like what you're explaining as being like who you are as a person and doing that like different thing. You accomplished that with that build. Totally, dude. Like, there's nothing about it. Like,
again, that's why it's like, it's surprising that I place in any of these competitions, you know, especially coming from where I'm at, in just an aspect of like, I'm going to make something that I think is cool. Hopefully other people like it. And I don't know, it's pretty humbling, you know, when you find out other people kind of do like it,
that's,
you know.
That's so fucked you just said that, dude. I was just about to say, dude, you are fucking humble, man. Like, you are very humble. Like, you put on good work, dude, to sit back and say that you're amazed that people find it.
Well, yeah, dude, like making the Captain America shields, it's like you're reproducing something that someone else has already made look cool, that you've already seen in a movie that's already cool. You know what I mean? It's like, I'm basically almost borderline copying someone else. You know?
Right.
So when you kind of like put your heart into something, you toss it out there, and there's like a positive response back. It's kind of like, fucking A, man. Maybe I did do something right this time.
Nice. It's one of the things that I've heard about kind of like the maker community before, that if you like it yourself, if you genuinely actually like it, if you're not lying to yourself and you actually look at what you did and you're like, dude, I really like this, good fucking luck. Other people aren't going to feel the same way about it.
Yeah. That's for sure.
Yeah.
And that's what's really intimidating with that whole maker community. Because
it is, dude, because
they've got their own set ways of doing stuff and their own set styles of.
And as you get to know that, it eats at your mind when you look at something yourself and you have to sit there and tell yourself, am I actually happy with it or not?
Right.
Oh, shit. Imposter syndrome starts to kick in then, right?
It does. And especially when you're like trying to, look up like different types of grinds and how, what they're called or how they're classified or the shape of a sword or curvature of a sword. It's like if the slightest curve here will be from a, I don't know, how do you say it? A scrimshar?
You're telling me, bro.
Like a saber versus whatever. It's just like, I don't know how to classify that. I just, make it sword a sword.
Yeah. I don't know not a thing about swords, dude. Pretty much like zilch zero. Sucks. And maybe that's partially where I'm like, I don't want to make knives. I don't know nothing about them. Why would I want to make knives if I don't know anything about them? I know nature, dude. I've always had a huge love for animals and flowers and trees and nature stuff, and that's why I lean towards that kind of stuff, I think, most likely.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, be one with nature.
You don't really do artistic stuff though, hey? Like with your prop making, it's all like weapons or armor?
Mainly just weapons.
Okay.
Yeah, not so much armor. Not really helmets or, arm padding or anything like that.
Well, shields I consider armor, so.
Yeah, I guess that could be, yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's a shield could be a weapon, it could be armor. Be all sorts of things. It could be a toboggan.
Right.
Yeah. Well, man, I don't know, dude. Is there anything else that we should dive into in this? We've been going for about 2 hours now, which tends to be our regular for an episode. I feel like we've touched on like everything we could possibly touch on almost at this point.
Yeah.
Plus, it's like, what is it, 11 o'clock at night for me right now. I don't know what time it is for you. 9 o'clock, right?
9 o'clock for me, yeah.
It's early for you, dude. It's 11 o'clock on a Friday. I was in the freaking shop before we started this, and I'm about to head back out to the shop. My friend Jason from Whiskey Delta Metalworks has a treadle hammer that he picked up through a deal for a deal. I've got a saw that's like a 5-inch capacity swivel saw that I for a deal. And we're making a trade somehow in amongst the weekend. I might not be here. He might not come until Monday, whatever. We're not too sure. But the swivel saw that I've got, the spring on it is snapped. It's spring loaded versus having a hydraulic drop to it.
Right.
So I'm going to try to make a new spring for it.
Oh, shit.
That's what I was doing when I was in the shop before we sat down. I had the spring from a car door, from an overhead door.
Shit.
From an overhead door that I chopped a chunk out of it. I stretched it out to being a straight piece, and I was going to start trying to curl it to the right diameter because of the overhead door spring's like 2-inch diameter, I think. And I got to like coil this down to like 1/2-inch diameter for the thing that it rolls over top of.
Damn.
I got a little bit of work ahead of me. Yeah. Then I got to heat treat it, temper it. Hopefully I temper it to the point that the spring is the right amount of springiness. Right. Otherwise I got to temper it again and again and again until I get the right amount of springiness. This is going to be a fun project. Jason's getting his money worth out of me for sure, but I want a treadle hammer. So I'm happy with the deal.
Hell yeah. There you go.
Yeah, man.
Fucking A.
I don't know. That's going to be the rest of my night, dude. What are you up to for the rest of the night?
Well, I'll probably put the kids to bed and then hop back out in the shop. Right now, I got to hop on the what they call the YouTube's biggest art collab, which was started by a guy named 1000. and it's basically been passed around the world, done by a bunch of different artists, from, you know, acrylic to oil to watercolor. So now it got passed on to me, and I get to work my magic on it.
Right, dude, for what? What are you going to do for it?
I'm going to do some leather and metal work to it.
Nice. Awesome, man. Yeah. Fucking right on, dude. There you go. One more freaking awesome YouTube thing to be involved in, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, that kind of like fell out of nowhere in the middle of the samurai challenge. It's like, oh, shit.
Oh, boy. Yeah, there you go. That's a little bit, you got to be careful about putting too much on your plate, eh?
Yeah. Well, I mean, this one wasn't even one that I signed up for. It's something that that my family and I have watched like develop over the past couple of years. And for it to kind of come out of left field and be like, hey, would you like to be the next one in line? It's just like, oh, shit. I cannot turn that down.
That's awesome, dude.
I know the first one that he did, because at the very end of it, when it's all done, he puts it up for auction for charity. Basically, 100% of the proceeds go to charity. And he raised, I can't even remember how many thousands of dollars he raised. I want to say it was like 50-some-odd thousand.
Nice.
Maybe even 100,000. That's rad, dude. But yeah, dude, I'll toss that on the plate. I'll take some more stress. I'll take another sleepless night.
So it's like a project that you and a whole bunch of artists are all putting all your work into one piece?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Dude, very cool. Gonna have to check
that out.
Yeah,
and it's just kind of like a surprise on who gets it next. Oh,
very cool, yeah. Man. Are you allowed to share it on Instagram before it's finished, or do you have to wait till it's finished to share?
Yeah, I gotta wait till it's finished.
Okay.
And post it up on YouTube, yeah.
How long is that, or when's that going to be?
I was hoping to get it done before, like I was telling you, my wife and I are going to take the kids on vacation in about a week. I was hoping to get it done before that, but I don't want to rush it, so it might be another couple weeks.
Okay. But when's the entire project going to finalize? Any idea?
It doesn't even matter. It's just however many artists can get their hands on it. However long it takes them when it's done. Okay.
I was just curious as to like when we can look forward to seeing it, some information about it come up on YouTube or Instagram or wherever.
The previous artists that have worked on it like so far have already posted their segments.
Okay, that's what I meant. Yeah, like you're like, so you so once you're done your work, you can post what you've
done.
Once
I'm done, yeah, I can post my section.
Cool. All right. I'll watch for that then for sure, man. Yeah. Keep on following you. Well, all right. You ready to do this, buddy? Color night.
You're going to have to leave.
Good day. Well, Matt, hey, thanks a lot for sitting down with me, dude. I really appreciate it, man. I know it was last minute.
Thank you.
So,
thank you.
Yeah. Oh, you do rad work, dude, man. I really, really think like the sword you did was like, that's what drew me into you, man. I watched it and I watched I saw the Instagram stuff. I watched the build on YouTube and I was like, holy fuck, this guy's doing rad fucking shit. Who is this guy? Right, like just pops out of nowhere. So congratulations, man, good for you, and keep up the good work, man.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, get those and kids
you as well.
Gotta start producing good work too one of these days. I'll make something cool like you do. Get those kids to bed, have yourself a good night, enjoy your vacation, man. And yeah, once again, thank you very much.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much, man. Have a good night.
Cheerio, eh?